Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a podcast. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. Hi, James. How are you?
Hello. How are you? I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Not bad.
Good old.
So
great
how you
podcast
doing?
Last week, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, I enjoyed listening to it.
The Rise versus Return, for those
yes,
who didn't
Cybermen,
listen to it.
Yes, yes.
Yes, it was a format that seemed to work quite well. I was quite pleased with myself. But
lots of good comments on the site as well.
Well, that's what I like, the fact that it did seem to genuinely interest people, rather than just being two of us pontificating over two silly episodes of a silly TV show. People seem to like it, so we'll probably do more, I'd have thought.
Don't say that!
Why?
God, it's silly.
Oh, it is a bit silly, isn't it?
Excuse me, yeah. Well, that's an entirely different podcast, I think. Is Doctor Who silly?
It is, absolutely. I think it's one we should do.
Yeah. Okay, then.
It is, definitely.
Also, there's been lots of Doctor Who news recently, and although I would personally prefer to sit here and focus on a single topic, there are a few things here that we need to catch up on, and there is the opportunity for me at some point to possibly lose it.
Okay, right, fine, fair.
So,
enough.
Yeah, that might happen. It might not. We'll just see how it goes. So, I'm really, really fascinated by newsreels from the past, of the future. But, you know, like from back in the early half of the 20th century up to maybe the 60s, early, mid-70s. The newsreels, for those of you who don't know, were basically news reports, often silent, although later on with voiceovers, which were played in cinemas for people to catch up with the news when they went to see the latest releases at their local cinema, their local... what did we have cinemas in the old days? It was all Odeons and Empires and things like that, wasn't it? All converted theatres.
Before the iPlayers.
Before the iPlayers, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the... yes.
And the What's-its.
And the others, yeah.
And the things which two, perhaps a little more imaginative and worthy hosts of podcasts would come up with to entertain their listeners rather than going dry as we have.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to think of the cinema chain. It's completely gone.
Well, there's many others.
Oh, there was the Rank organization. They had cinema.
Oh, there you go. Yes, there we go.
So,
it wasn't it.
It was. Yeah, we got there in the end. Sorry, listener. So, these newsreels were recorded by several different companies, but most recognised in the field of newsreels was Pathé. And British Pathé have released their archive, and apparently it's the entire archive, of something like 90,000 films to YouTube, which is a massive library. As I'm sure you can appreciate, 90,000 is a very large number. And in it, there's lots of Doctor Who-related stuff. There's Daleks and Cybermen. There's genuine monsters. There's fan-made monsters. In 1964, a fan-made monster. A fan-made Dalek is absolutely marvellous. It sells books. There's appearances by actors before they were the Doctor. John Pertwee appears twice. William Hartnell's in there. Have you watched these?
I am watching one as we speak.
Which one is it?
It's the one that we have the immediate link with John Pertwee.
Oh, right, this is the second Pertwee one, I think.
Yeah.
Right, there's an earlier Pertwee one in which he and his brother, Michael, are members of a waistcoat club. So 1940s, isn't it? 1950s is supposed to be a waistcoat club. and they're just all these people just sporting these snazzy waistcoats in black and white, looking all very sort of 1950s and handsome. And then... The voiceover at the end describes them as waistcoateers. Yeah. It was absolutely marvellous. There's also one of William Hartnell from around 1947, in which he basically looks exactly the same age as he did in 1963. 16 years later.
Well, Pertwee looks quite, doesn't actually really look that much different himself, does he?
He doesn't. It's basically just the hair that changes slightly with Pertwee, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. No, they're interesting. I mean, any of these sort of things are interesting. I like, at the moment, I've been sort of, through the weeks I've been working, I've had various old black and whites on iPlayer. And again, it's just that same thing. It's just fascinating to see the stuff within the context of its time, and a clear reminder of how much Hitchcock hates women as well. That comes very clear out. Incredible. But yeah, no, it is fascinating, especially as I say, when you've got the context of people that you know fairly well for stuff they do later on, in the context of these very different and unusual little cinema snippets.
Yeah, it is good. There is, of course, a downside of these newsreels. So if you head into YouTube too, and obviously we'll put the links to some of the key ones in the show notes. If you do head into the YouTube website looking for these old newsreels, you're going to bump into videos of, well, film of war propaganda, which perhaps isn't so bad as what you will find, which is realism of social decay in the 1960s and 70s, which is really quite depressing to watch. So there's just a little kind of a emotional health warning for you. It isn't all, you know, stars at premieres and things like that.
Right.
It covers all sorts of things, all facets of life, as it should, really, because a lot of stuff just gets polished over these days and ironed over. Right, so moving on from Pathé News, there's a lot of people who like the idea of Matt Smith and Benedict Cumberbatch kind of swapping places or meeting up and doing something together. I don't know why. It's not something that I particularly jive with or indeed understand. And this is kind of manifested over the years with the Sherlock and Doctor Who things and Stephen Moffat's position in charge of both of them. And over the years, there's been suggestions that one might appear in the other. Both actors have recently stepped forward to say this isn't happening. I think a good reason for it not happening, perhaps, might be that Matt Smith isn't the Doctor anymore. But he said that there's very little chance of him appearing in Sherlock. A few weeks ago, Stephen Moffat said if there was a suitable role came up for Matt in Sherlock, then they would probably consider him. But Matt has said that he won't be appearing in Sherlock. And similarly, Benedict Cumberbatch has said that he won't be appearing in Doctor Who. James, you're someone who's possibly more in touch with particular niches of fandom than I am, in some sense. Do you?
Well, yeah. I mean, apart from Northern fandoms of the North, I'm not very in touch with that. Indeed. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense.
No. Do you get this fascination?
I don't get it, but there is, as far as I understand, there is legitimacy behind it. That has, as far as I'm aware, there has been talks before.
Right.
About this, about Smith.
Official talks.
Well, not being there, not being privy, I can't say whether they're official, but I do, as far as I know, there has been talks with Smith going into Sherlock for, I think it was either Series 4 or even Series 5. It was a long projection.
Right.
Now, this was a while ago that as I was aware that these talks were being mooted.
Well, based on that, I mean, that could be 5 or 6 years in the future, couldn't it?
Well, it could at this rate, couldn't it? So in a sense, I could say that there's probably what they're saying could be quite genuine, because times change. Smith's in a different position now. He's got workload. I mean, Martin Freeman had a bit of a hissy of late with going backwards and forth on this whole thing about Sherlock. There was one. I heard of one engagement where a certain news source, which I won't name, sort of made a rather pointed comment that, you know, are they ever going to get round to doing him coming back to the UK to do any more Sherlock? And, you know, there's a part of him, I think, which sometimes there was a bit of a like, well, you know, there's more to life than Sherlock. But at the same time, I can't remember if it was the same interview or another interview. He was very much of the point of that they want to get Sherlock done sooner than later, because the schedules just don't match.
Yeah.
And as you say, they just go on and on into the future, so he's keen to come back and do it. So yeah, Sherlock's a bit of a bane. I mean, as far as I'm aware, the whole point of Sherlock, as I think I might have said before, was that it was meant to, it was commissioned on the basis that it would sit as a three episodes or so, fairly short run, that would sit in between Doctor Who and Stephen could flip between the two and do Sherlock in those interim periods. And of course, obviously, that's not happened through various reasons, and it's sort of become its own, I wouldn't say albatross, because it's a very, very popular albatross if it was, but it's not done as it was required to be a regular thing that would just be filmed in between.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a funny one. So yeah, I think because it takes so long for these series to come out, I think there could be a very good chance that Matt is genuine about saying, well, you know, I don't see myself going into Sherlock, and I can see Stephen as well sort of saying, well, you know, is there room for it? But I'm aware that I was told that there was talks.
Right, okay.
A while ago.
Matt said that
but not with Benedict going into Doctor Who. Right, never heard of that.
Matt Smith says there's enough peculiar Englishmen in Sherlock. He cites in particular Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman, but in fairness, he's overlooked Matt Gatiss, who also does a very good peculiar English.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And I think that's rubbish, really, because, I mean, you've got the whole point of Moffat Sherlock is there's a lot of extreme characters. I mean, Andrew Scott's Moriarty is an example. Okay, he's not playing an Englishman, but you're playing extreme characters.
Well, he's dead, though, isn't he?
No, he's not.
Spoilers!
So Andrew Scott is an example. So there'd definitely be room for Matt Smith if he wants to go into it. At the same time, I think there's probably an issue of the show doesn't need, at the moment, doesn't need the publicity of that. It's got enough publicity on itself, so it doesn't need to do that. And I suppose there is that essential feeling of, you know, what would it actually bring? What would it bring for Matt? And, you know, would it bring expectations and disappointments to fans?
Yeah.
Because it won't be Doctor Who with Sherlock, which is ultimately what people want. They think, oh, you know, he's a bit like Sherlock and Sherlock's a bit like the Doctor. Why don't we have them together? Because that'd be fun.
But would it, though?
Well, that's it. As we said before, I'm not over keen on those sort of crossovers because they just never quite do justice to either world, I don't think. I don't think the Sherlock meeting the Doctor would do good for either of them, would it?
Well, you only have to look at the IDW series, don't you? The Doctor Who and Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah.
The most interesting parts in that, although the characterization's good for the main part of the story, the most interesting parts are the flashbacks to the Fourth Doctor meeting the Cybermen.
It's just, they never quite work because you can, they always run down the same formula because ultimately you've got two fan bases and you don't want to annoy either.
Yeah.
So you can't really face them off too much. So it ends up about being initial disgruntlement, a few funny quips at each other, and then how do these two parties solve the situation without either feeling that the other has trumped the other, if you see what I mean. The only really good comic I liked of a team up was one of Batman versus Judge Dredd. It was the second one they did, and it was just good because, as I say, in these sort of team ups, one is never meant to be better than the other. And then the second one, at the whole end, they fight pretty much through the whole thing. And then at the end, you find out that Dredd's been sort of holding Batman back to stop him from doing something so time will go in a certain direction. And you suddenly realise that they're not equally matched at all. It's just Dredd's just been holding him off, keeping him busy while his master plan goes on. And that was kind of weird because it was like, you know, Batman's been made to be a bit of an idiot in a weird way. And it was a kind of a shocking thing for a team up to do. Not many of them do that. So I don't really get it. But yeah, so would it happen? I could see it happening still,
right,
in the future. I don't think it's probably definitive, though.
Okay. I'm not sure if I'd like to. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of I'm unhappy with Sherlock at the moment, so I'm even doubtful of whether I'll continue watching it or not after the last one.
I've never been a massive fan of it. I sort of watch it because it's on, and to be fair, it is a lot better than a lot of crap that's on.
Oh, yeah.
But, it doesn't tend to satisfy, especially in the last year, where it seems to be like so many shows do when they get to about their second or third year, and they start over focusing on the fan base and less on the story. So not only do you get these constant sort of quips and jabs at fans, but you've also got these indulgences of fans, the need to sort of make Watson as important as Sherlock, and for Sherlock to really love Watson and think he's most well, and it's just, you know, think, oh, it gets a bit indulgent.
Yeah,
you know, keep it focused, you know, this is about him solving mysteries you don't understand. That's what people watch it for, and I think shows do tend to sort of deviate from that and get caught too intertwined in the central characters.
That's pretty much how I feel about it, to be honest. Well, let's move on again. And it's 15 years since Big Finish first did a Doctor Who.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's mad. Although, let's just think about it. It's 2014, which means it's 9 years since Doctor Who came back.
That's mad as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, that Block 2's been back longer than Big Finish was around prior to Doctor Who coming back.
Whoa.
Mm. It's a kind of a scary...
That's heavy, man.
Because you kind of imagine, you kind of think of Big Finish being around for ages before Doctor Who returned.
Yeah,
but it wasn't really, in comparison to the amount of time we've had Doctor Who back. It's
That's how slow things went for Doctor Who fans, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess also...
2005.
I guess also because in the 90s we were so focused on books as well, because they were the only other real source apart from the comic.
Yeah.
The comic strips in the magazine. We tend to sort of almost, I think, group it as a longer period. So we think of Big Finish being almost as long as the New Adventures were going on in a sort of weird way. So we probably span it further out into that decade. But I mean, it was incredible. I mean, at the time it was incredible, and it still is, because no other show's done that. Not to the level. I mean, I know they've had Star Trek. They did have Star Trek audiobooks, you know, read by the actors. Like, you know, George Takei would read. But to actually have the actual cast... and to continue on the adventures as audio was quite incredible.
Yeah. He's got a good voice, George Takei, hasn't he?
He has. He seems to.
Very rare among Americans, I think. He's got a very individual voice.
Yes.
He's got a good voice. I'd say he's got a good voice for stage. I don't know if he's done much stage work.
He has. He's got quite a sort of almost a thespic tonality to him, hasn't he? Mm.
Anyway, so Big Finish, 15 years. So first of all, congratulations, Big Finish, for reaching 15 years. Absolutely marvellous. And while we're on the topic of Big Finish, dear listener, we would prefer it if you didn't listen to any other podcasts. There are some very good podcasts out there, however. But if you were to listen to any other Doctor Who podcast, at the moment we would recommend Toby Haydock's weekly podcast, in which he talks to different actors from Doctor Who in order to cover every single Doctor Who episode as part of his part of the 50th anniversary. He started several months ago, back in 2013. It's a really good podcast, and it brings up lots of little gems from time to time. In recent weeks, he's had Sir Saran Jones, Russell T Davies twice, and Arthur Darvill. So head over to the Big Finish website and subscribe to that. It's a really good podcast. Back to Big Finish and their 15th anniversary. They're bringing out a new run of plays all in one go called The Worlds of Doctor Who, and this comes out in November, and they're all separate stories, but they're linked by the enigmatic Wholly Dangerous Mr. Rees, who's played by Jamie Glover, son of Julian Glover, and who played William Russell in An Adventure in Space and Time.
I didn't realise he was his son. That's interesting.
Yeah, apparently so. There are four stories in The Worlds of Doctor Who: Mind Games by Justin Richards, The Re-Singer Process by Justin Richards, The Screaming Skull by Jonathan Morris, and Second Sight by Nick Wallace and Justin Richards. Presumably Mr. Richards has quite a strong voice throughout this series of plays. Who is in this? The Sixth Doctor's in it. Colin Baker, Leela, presumably Romana, Captain Yates, Jago and Lightfoot, Lisa Bowman, probably as her Jago and Lightfoot character rather than as Benny, Simon Williams, Pamela Salem, Claren Gedhill as the countermeasures team, and Daphne Ashbrook and Yi-Ji So as their unit characters, Matheson and Sato, as opposed to their TV movie characters, which obviously don't appear for licensing reasons. It looks like quite an interesting diversion for Big Finish. So I'd be interested to see how this one turns out. Looks very interesting. What do you think?
Interesting mix of characters as well.
Mm.
It's kind of a weird shame for them, really, that they sort of have their 15th year is sort of slightly been ellipsed by the 50th last year, which obviously they had quite a big thing with Light at the End. So in a sense, it sort of perhaps carries less of a sort of weight as it should. And with Dark Eyes as well being so prominent still, it sort of, again, it sort of almost gets lost in the background of all these sort of quite big epic stuff they've been doing of late.
Yeah. So the first episode's got Jago and Lightfoot in it. The second episode is set in 1964, and that has the countermeasures team in there. The third episode is The Screaming Skull, as I mentioned earlier, and that features Mike Yates, Ruth Matheson and Charlie Sato. And then we've got the fourth part. The actions of Mr. Reese have alerted the Time Lords of Gallifrey, and Romana has assigned her best warrior. Independently, the Sixth Doctor has arrived on Earth. A power from the dawn of the universe is about to be unleashed once more.
So that's obviously Louise Jameson as the warrior, assumedly. So, yeah.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Seems unlikely to be Yates. But because he's a screaming skull. I think what's quite nice about it is it's quite understated, as in the fact that, you know, you've not got major players in this. I mean, you've got Jago and Lightfoot, which obviously are very popular, but they're still minor characters. You know, Countermeasures team getting another bout. Captain Yates. And then, as you say at the end, looks like you build up to the end with Colin Baker, and you know the more mainstream sort of big names, as you say, like Lala Ward and Leela. So it's kind of good like that it's not just, you know, four stories of four different doctors pushing it. It's all the sort of subtleties within the world, as it calls it, the world of Doctor Who,
yeah,
rather than Doctor himself. So yeah, no, I think it's quite nice. It's quite a nice approach. It's good to see the Big Finish isn't just sort of sitting on its comfortable laurels and just sort of belting out the same sort of things. It's trying different approaches.
Are laurels comfortable to sit on?
I don't know. I'm not even sure if I mixed a metaphor there.
No, I didn't. Well, what I was going to ask is, what do you think Doctor Who's going to do next year? Because it's 10 years, isn't it, since the return of the Who?
Yeah, I suppose so. I think they've got to be careful in the grounds that, you know, every year could start to become a celebration of some sort or other.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, Stephen Moffat goes, and then I'd be ready to celebrate. No, I don't know. I don't know what they would do. I mean, to be honest, if they managed to do a year with a full year of Doctor Who, that might be a celebration enough, eh?
Yeah. All right, then. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, this, if we're following this list that we've got on screen in front of us, this is where I kind of perhaps start swearing and get a bit annoyed.
Okay.
If you're a follower of Casterbus on Instagram, dear listener, and if you didn't know we're on Instagram, then it's instagram.com/CasterbusDW, you will know that I have been collecting the Doctor Who figurine collection part work from Eagle Moss. And you might have heard us talking about it on the podcast before, but recently I put some photos and short clips of film on Instagram demonstrating the, shall we say, politely at this stage, call it the range of quality in the painting and in some cases the moulding. I think it's fair to say, James, that I've come to the end of my tether with the Doctor Who figurine collection.
First world problems.
Well, it is, absolutely it is. But it's also, we're a Doctor Who podcast, and this is a Doctor Who product that, you know, costs £8 an issue.
Yes.
It's not cheap. And it's getting a little bit ridiculous where you can't trust the quality of a paint, of the quality of the paint job. You don't know what you're going to get from issue to issue, whether it's going to be spot on, acceptable, or in the vast majority of cases, certainly in my experience, shoddy. Personally, I think that they should just give up. No, I really do, right? We subscribe to two magazines, okay? One of them's a completely different thing. It's the, I don't even know what it's called, but it's basically Disney cake making and icing.
Kerry gets
for the twins. Okay, so there's no figurines with it. There is a very, very good magazine with it. The quality of the Doctor Who magazine in this part work, the content's fine, but it's just very flat and kind of lacks imagination in places. And in some cases, this is reflected in the quality of the figurines. I'm looking at the 10th Doctor one now. And although it isn't a great resemblance to David Tennant, the quality of it elsewhere is perfect. The paintwork's great. The fabrics have got texture. There's a lot of work gone into producing a good piece there. The same goes for my 4th Doctor. Although the paintwork's a little bit untidy around the hair, everything else is fine. Things like the Silence and the Ice Warrior, Omega, Rassilon, the Timothy Dalton version, the Sontaran, the Ood, they're all great. Then we get to the Daleks. I don't even want to talk about the police box I mentioned previously because it's too embarrassing for words. But then we get to the Daleks and things start getting very shoddy. And, you know, they have a lot of monsters to choose from. We're up to issue 19 already, plus a special. And they've done four Daleks plus Davros already. And the Daleks, the quality of the Daleks is decreasing. The one that we've just received is a, I think it's a mutant Dalek. It doesn't even look like it's finished. I must confess, I'm not great with a paintbrush on this kind of detail scale. And it looks like I painted it 20 years ago, basically, when I was into kind of achieving that sort of thing. 20 years ago? Mm. Old design 20 years ago. Yeah, about 20 years ago, when I was about 18, 19. It's really, really poor. And it's certainly not worth £7. You know, there's paint splashes across it. There's bits where it's just not finished, basically. And should a part work in the 21st century be issuing statues of this low quality? I don't think they should. I think they're doing the fans a disservice. I think they're doing their license a disservice. So that's kind of the end of my rant. It's goodbye to my subscription to the Doctor Who figurine collection.
All right. You can do that, can't you? Just
yes, stop. Thankfully.
That's lucky. Good.
It is, yes. So if anyone else out there has any feelings on the Doctor Who figurine collection, we do want to know about them. So please, well, I do in particular. James probably isn't that interested, but I do. So please let us know either by email or comments, or you can use that Twitter thing, or even on Instagram if you follow us there.
Mm.
You any thoughts about that? I mean, you must have seen them in the shop, in the WH Smith or your local newsagent supermarket.
I don't go to WH Smith anymore. Why would I need to do that? I have the internet for my magazines and papers. What's okay. WH Smith?
Well, you saw the photos I put online.
I saw a couple of them, yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I think if you're going to be foolish enough to subscribe to an online flat shallow magazine for the promise of something to clutter up your mantelpiece, well, you get what you pay for, don't you? It's what they call inappropriately karma. But no, as I say, I can appreciate, you know, if it's something that invests you, if you're someone who likes models and enjoys that experience of seeing us, I can see why it's so frustrating. So, but like that with all consumerism, yes. You know, you just cancel your subscription is your best voice, isn't it?
I think it is indeed. Okay, so let's move on to Peter Capaldi. He's the Doctor, Peter Capaldi.
Yeah.
He is the Doctor, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know what you're saying and I know where you're going with this, but carry on.
yeah, there seems to be a pattern in Peter Capaldi's attire, at least, that he... but he's made a couple of public appearances in which he appears to be dressed as the Doctor before he was actually cast as the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one that people spotted a few weeks ago with him appearing on the Craig Ferguson show in the United States a few years ago, back when the Thick of It movie spin-off In the Loop was being promoted. He's also done a film about surrealism for part of a wider... he's one of many people appearing in this series of movies about different art movements. And again, he is dressed in a style that's very similar to the one that was revealed a few weeks ago with the suit and the button and the nice lining. What do you think?
Yes, you can see the similarities, can't you?
Yeah, it's very, very. I mean, it's not like Tom Baker turning up to work on his building site with a long scarf and a hat and a long coat, is it? This is quite. Paul McGann walking around dressed as Lord Byron, or Wild Bill Hickok. You know, this is quite a stunning, or striking similarity.
Yes. No. Well, it's odd. I can only assume that he actually likes the look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I can assume is that he just genuinely thinks it looks really cool and. I can't imagine it being a promotional thing. It's not the exact article. It's not the exact...
I think there's two things going on here. Either he is the Doctor, actually the Doctor, which is probably unlikely, or that at his advanced age, because, you know, he's in his 50s, Doctor Who fans, so all you Matt Smith fans, I know you're not going to be watching Doctor Who anymore, apparently. So my niece tells me. You know, just heard that. That he's had plenty of time to find out actually what he looks good in and what he doesn't. And they all came to the same conclusion.
What was that?
Hey?
What was the conclusion?
That he looks good in that.
Oh, that he looks good in that. Right,
yeah,
I see.
Yeah, I see.
Well, yes.
But, I mean, that goes back to the Pertwee thing again as well, doesn't it? Because I know I mentioned Tom Baker and Paul McGann, but John Pertwee kind of dressed like that anyway, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did have that dandy style to him. I mean, we were talking about the Waistcoateers earlier. Mm. He was a man who liked his clothes. I'm not saying he dressed like Jimi Hendrix or Austin Powers, but he did have that kind of... how would you best describe his clothes style, John Pertwee?
Flamboyant.
Flamboyant, that's the exactly perfect word, yes. A flamboyant dress style. So if you were the Dr. James, what would you wear?
I think I would probably go for... Well, if it's anything like me, it would probably be... It would probably be something more like Eccleston.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of more my thing, I think, is I tend to always like long dark jackets. I've always felt that V-necks are quite fashionable, even when they're not anymore, but I think they carry a certain dignity, especially when you're sort of in your 30s, you know, getting on a bit. I don't know. I've always quite liked the tenant outfit. I think that's got its own sort of dignity to it as well. I can't stand bow ties. you know, I think I love Matt Smith, but his outfit was a bit dickish for me. It just didn't do anything. And while as a kid, I loved the cricket gear, when I got older and realized it wasn't cricket gear, it was just
beige.
It was just, yes, it was just some amazing ability to recreate into physical form the color beige. yeah, that was, it sort of loses its power. So, and it does have a sort of slight look as if it's his pajamas, doesn't it? Pajamas with a jumper,
yeah,
which is an odd mix.
Two of them wearing their pajamas at first.
What about you? I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because so many doctor lovers always go for the sort of Edwardian look, don't they? That they jump for it. I mean, is that something which you would do if it was yours, or would you?
Oh, I mean, no, it's tricky. I don't think I would go Edwardian. I really don't. I think I might go. I might be tempted to go sort of Waistcoateer era, to be honest with you. Having watched the Waistcoateers film, I'm quite taken with it. So I might go Waistcoateer. And...
I mean, did you like Pertwee's? Because Pertwee's wasn't Edwardian. It was just flamboyant, wasn't it?
Yeah. But it was also zeitgeisty as well.
Yeah.
Because, he wasn't the first character on TV to dress like that. There was the Adam and Liv's character.
Yes, true.
Then you've got Jimi Hendrix with his velvet suits. And
true.
So... he was tapping into it, and clearly he was dressing like that anyway, because he was a stylish man about town.
I was going to say, I mean, just thinking, you know, when it came back, when Dog 2 came back, and I saw Eccleston's costume, and I remember, you know, obviously Davis saying that he wanted him to look like, and it's sort of a guy goes down the pub who's an intelligent guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was when I saw Tennant's outfit, I thought, okay, that's smart. That looks like the Doctor for a modern age.
Yeah.
And I think in a sense, going back to Tennant again, funnily, it is actually the parallel, I think, of Davison's outfit in a sort of weird way. Where it's sort of Davison's outfit, while it was meant to look slightly Edwardian, it was still had a sort of 80s feel to it a bit. It feels almost as if that's the sort of outfit that Davison should have had, I think. I think that's what I'm trying to say. It would have fitted his figure, the long coat as well. That is what Davison should have had in 1980s. The sort of Tennant was, to me, spot on, because it didn't dawdle in this whole thing of him having to look old-fashioned. And, you know, no offence, again, really, to Smith's Doctor, but it did, for me, feel like it was, again, a little concerned about going retro, sort of... I know they were trying for the young man, old man thing. But, you know, the bow tie is something that all kids would think, oh, that's a bit old-fashioned. Now it's cool because it's old-fashioned. He's trying to do it. And, you know, the braces and the sort of slightly tweedy look. It just felt a little contrived in its odd way, a little backward. And so, yeah, I think Tennant's was a very clever costume. I did
like Eccleston's. I was surprised by it when I first saw it. And I did have second thoughts, but it reflected the character, didn't it? It was a stripped back Doctor. It was without having lots of stupid clothes on.
Yes.
Reflected in the character of the Doctor without, you know, without having, and the show itself without relying on all the old backstory and baggage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Eccleston's was a great costume. I liked it. And as I say, I liked it because it resonated with the sort of things I would tend to wear. So I kind of liked it. Not because that made me like the Doctor, but it was just nice to see a look that I could relate to, and it had sense within the character. And I think maybe it was one of the few times where the look was relevant to the Doctor rather than the look being there to create the Doctor. And in most versions, that has been the case. And, you know, before people say, yeah, the 80s, no, the 70s as well. I mean, if you take Tom Baker's, you know, the scarf is utterly ridiculous. It has no bearing on who the Tom Baker Doctor is. It just makes the image, doesn't it? I mean, there's no need for a scarf. There's nothing in his eccentricity which even suggests he needs a scarf. I mean,
well, he needs it in the Pyramid of Mars in order to measure that.
Oh yes, and he tries to sling a hook in a control in Ark in Space. He trips someone over.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a Ford Prefect's towel, you know, you can start giving excuses for his existence. But by and large, it's an affectation to create the character. While with Eccleston, who was a character who had obviously seen a lot of war, was very disassociated. He didn't feel flamboyant. He wasn't himself, really. So the stripped back sort of look functioned for him as it reflected the personality.
Yeah,
but that's very rare that really affects. I mean, I suppose you could say Davison's did in a sense that his character was immediately taken by cricket, and so I suppose in a very cartoony way, that was part of the personality there. But it's very rare that sort of comes across, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I'm not sure where that leads the Tennant. I suppose the Tennant makes sense that it's a sort of more like the Doctor, a little more confident. But a new start sort of feel to his clothes. So,
and contemporary as well. He's landed in 2000. And, well,
yes,
whatever,
true.
Whatever year it is, but at that point.
But then he does go and get the stuff from his timeless wardrobe. So that
he does, yeah. But he's dressed like everyone else could be.
To a degree, yeah. Well, he feels, yes, he's living a little more of a comfortable, normal existence. Smith sort of works, I guess, in the sense that they play it into the story. That he has certain things which he thinks looks really good on him, and the joke is that everyone else doesn't think so. You know, his fascination in bow ties and fezzes, anything that we would think is uncool, he genuinely thinks looks really smart. So in a sense, it sort of does fit with him a bit that they have made the effort to tie it in, that he's not just like I mean, like, as much as I love McCoy, you know, his costume, especially in Time of the Rani, where he finds it, it's just silly, really. It's just, you know, because it looks, I suppose you could argue it's that same thing. He thinks he looks good in it. Well, everyone else doesn't, but it doesn't quite work in the same way that it did with Smith. So, and I suppose
the Colin did as robot as well, isn't there, with the forethought to try on those various costumes?
Yes. Yeah. Well, again, it's played a little silly, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I suppose Collins, to be fair, is exactly the same as Smith in the sense that the joke is, again, but it's overplayed to a point where he just looks stupid, that he thinks it looks great and everyone else thinks he looks rubbish.
Yeah.
And it's that same sort of thing that, as with Smith, that he's out of touch with fashion, but it lacks the subtlety, because you could imagine someone liking finding a bow tie and thinking, yeah, I think that really looks good on me. And everyone else thinking, oh my God. But that costume, you know, for Colin made no sense at all, because there's no way that anyone would feel good in that. It's too contrived.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting topic again. I never really realised it was such an interesting topic.
Well, there you go. In terms of what I would do, I don't really know. I've kind of thought about it. And again, like you, I think I just the leather jacket thing type kind of resonates. Perhaps more of a 70s throw on it, though. I'd be maybe a Lewis Collins than professionals look.
Well, yeah, I must admit, I do love. I used to have my old brown leather jacket, which was a little more reminiscent of something you'd imagine Sam Tyler wearing.
Yeah.
I've looked high and low for similar sort of jackets, and they're very hard to find. But I don't know. I could perhaps go with an 80s Doctor's with, you know, the body warmer and the trainers. Yes, sort of like a Marty McFly. That could be good. Something I've been done.
Life preserver.
Yeah, the life preserver. That would be a laugh. I don't know. I tend to like trying to mix styles. I do actually have a red life preserver. I mean, I like it. I liked it in Back to the Future. I liked it in Flight of the Conchords. I thought it worked well. Similarly, I like leather hats because I like them in Homicide: Life on the Street, and I like them in Foo Fighters video, the one that sort of turned me onto a leather hat. I do have a Panama hat, and I suppose that was probably a little.
You really?
Yeah, I carry a Panama hat, which I wear in the summer, which might be a little of, you know, homage.
Don't you wear it?
I do. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I do. I wear all my hats. I like. I like hats. I always have done. I think a lot of my characters that I've enjoyed have liked hats, and I think they're a little different. So yeah, I think it's nice to sort of pinch things, and maybe when you like Doctor, you just start doing that. You start feeling more comfortable. I don't know where that comes from. No. To pinch things from different fashions rather than feeling set toned. You know, I find it a bit sad when people do just. I don't mean sad, because obviously I'd be offending Brian. Because he loves looking, you know, dressing like the Doctor. But I find it when people outside of, you know, cosplay are just trying to look like a character, whoever the character is that they like, I think then it sort of loses it. But it's nice to sort of like art, you know, your art, whether it's writing or artwork or music, tends to be a pastiche of stuff you've already experienced and you like yourself. You know, you'll see Lou Reed in The Pixies and you'll see Faith No More in Papa Roach, to use some more contemporary examples. You see aspects. So in a sense, when you clothe yourself, it's kind of cool if bits of you do come from things that you liked from the past. Yeah. I wish I could get my braces working, because they're proper braces. I haven't got any hooks for my trousers, but I loved them in David Bowie's Time Will Crawl. I saw braces. He was wearing those back in 87. I loved it. So I've always had a pair of braces that I sometimes use, very rarely. You know, so you sort of pick things out from different. I think that's the fun thing, I suppose. And that's where the Doctor can sort of inform the mindset of people who enjoy the show.
Well, you know, one of the coolest people I've always thought is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
In their sort of mid-70s heyday, also early to mid-70s heyday, he would have these jumpsuits with ornate designs. And then he'd have a guitar and he'd have it slightly open. Now, of course, the Doctor's not going to wear anything like that. But then again, who else is actually going to wear anything like that? Very few people do dress like rock stars.
But I always liked Bowie for that reason, because Bowie would always stay slightly ahead of the curve somehow and often inform the curve. And he'd be wearing what other people weren't. And I remember actually going back to Faith No More, which was a band that I adored when I was music orientated in the early 90s. And when it came to Angel Dust, Patton, the lead singer, started wearing sort of like Bermuda shirts, sort of like surf shorts on stage. And at one point I was like, what's wrong with him? He's got sellotape on his eyebrow, and he had an eyebrow ring, and people didn't do it back in 1991. And he had, you know, the thick goatee beard thing, which I must admit I sported on one podcast not long ago, and that wasn't done at the time either. And suddenly they re-energized the look in rock, but they were doing stuff which now you see all the time. You know, anyone in rock has the long goatee, has the goatee beard or the eyebrow ring. And it's fascinating when you get people who do inform fashion by stepping out of the ring. And, you know, and it's funny now, the Doctor does do that, because as we've said before, you will see people wearing the sort of tweedy things that Matt Smith wore or the long coat that Tennant wore.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see whether Capaldi's outfit might inform a more mature generation into what to wear, because there is a certain factor of it being a very simplistic and elegant and clean look, which as you get older perhaps you do less of because you care less.
Possibly.
And maybe you'll see older people looking for that more refined fitting look, slim fitting look, if their body will allow it.
Quite possibly. It's funny you mentioned Faith and More, because about a week ago I put on a radio station and heard From Out of Nowhere for the first time in about 10 years. 3 days later, exactly the same thing happened again.
That's crazy, isn't it, when it happens twice? Yeah.
On a different station as well. One was Radio 2, the other one was Absolute Classic Rock.
Isn't that scary, isn't it, that Radio 2 now has the stuff which was like, you know, contemporary in 1989 from Out of Nowhere.
It might have been 6 years ago, actually, now I think about it.
Well, okay.
You are right. It does play stuff from then.
But, I mean, these things inform. And it is interesting when television now, I think, informs fashion to a degree in a way that it never did. You know, it was always music which did it. You know, what musicians wore would inform a lot of trends. And now it's sort of like television, you know, as I say, you know, things like Doctor Who has got a certain cult medium where people can look quite obviously like the Doctor and not feel like they're, you know, a bit of an idiot. And that's cool.
It is cool. It is very cool indeed. Well, cool. What else is cool is recommendations. Do you have one this week?
Probably. I probably have a few.
Okay.
I think... one recommendation I'm going to make, just based on sheer speculation, is if indeed Ben Miller is in Series 8, which it sounds like is. I'm very keen on him being the master. I don't know. I've not found out or anything, but he'd be a great master, I think. I he's a brilliant actor. So that's a good recommendation.
What, just Ben Miller?
Yeah, why not? Okay. I also recommend that you don't support Norwich City at a weekend game against Manchester United, because you'll tend to find that it becomes rather embarrassing by the end with a 4-0 defeat. So that's another recommendation.
Have you been watching football,
James? Yeah, I have.
Oh dear.
I've also been watching WrestleMania. Go with it. recommendations Doctor Who-wise.
I wasn't aware you could follow football.
What?
Did you have your butler sort of explaining what was going on? Huh?
Well, yes. The butler brought the servants in, and they sort of
played a kick about.
Well, exactly. You know, we moved the dining furniture, and it's quite a large room, so they could put sort of basic goalposts at the other end, which of course were ornamental artifacts from the Peking Dynasty. We didn't have anything else at hand at the time, and then they kicked around a paper ball, and they were very good at getting it between the goalposts, because naturally if they hit the goalpost and broke any of those Peking Dynasties, they'd be paying for it, which, you know, no servant's going to be able to afford, and then it'd have to be the slave trade. No, not at all. Anyway, yes, yeah, so it was great. That was great. Doctor Who wise, I bought Spearhead from Space on Blu-ray, so I am slowly making my way through that, and I've just watched the first part, and I am enjoying the crisp quality. I find it quite fascinating watching it now. I mean, when I first got it, it was like when I was about 12 or 13 as a VHS.
The Spearhead, did you say, sorry?
Yes, Spearhead. Yeah. And didn't realise, you know, it didn't occur to me it was all on film, and how that changes the whole feel of it all. I find it quite fascinating on a rewatch how close the hospital is to where the TARDIS lands. And you get the impression it's in the nearby area, but you think, oh, well, it's probably about 10 miles away and it's the nearest hospital. No, it's right next door. You just got to go over the garden, hop the fence, and it's just sitting there with a couple of unit soldiers, which is a bit weird. But yeah, that's kind of cool. Something I will actually recommend, two other things I will quickly recommend. If you've not seen it, well, you should go and see it, but I've watched the entirety of the first series of Orphan Black, which I hadn't watched, which is a BBC America production, which BBC Three bought up once they realised it was cool. And they've just finished the first series. Well, they finished the first series, been re-airing, and the second series starts this week. If you've not seen that, it's worth getting on DVD. Very good television, very good drama. You'd be a fool not to miss it. You'd be a fool to miss it, I think. And finally, I think my final recommendation is a very quick one, is that I was on a podcast, I recorded a podcast a few weeks ago. It's called We Came from the Basement, and it's all to do with Millennium, I'm afraid. But it's, if you want to hear me talk about something else and listen to it, they're very, very nice, podcast group. Very good. Worth a browse. And they're not Doctor Who, so they don't really impinge on our power and territory here. So, yeah, I think I will throw one out for them as well.
Okay, that's nice of you. Those are all good suggestions. I would just like to recommend... I don't have a massive recommendation this week because I've been really struggling with work and I've been a little bit under the weather. But what if you follow us on Twitter, you will have seen a tweet last night of a picture of Lala Ward pre-Doctor Who. So I would urge you to search out and enjoy an episode of The Professionals from 1977 called When the Heat Cools Off, in which a young Lala Ward attempts to... beguile Ray Doyle, Martin Shaw, into believing that her father, who a convicted murderer who Doyle arrested, didn't actually commit said crime. And she comes very close.
Yes. Well, I would say Martin Shaw actually lives near me.
Does he really?
He does, yeah.
Do you say hello to
him? Mansion down the road. It's Mansion Lane. Is it
Mansion Lane? Do you say hello to him?
No, I don't. Apparently, you don't mention the professionals either.
No, you don't mention the professionals. No.
Or his size.
Is he quite short? Isn't he?
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, you pay a lot of money to speak to him about the professionals. Apparently.
Well, I'm not quite sure why. I mean, it was an interesting show. I mean, it was an interesting show in the fact that, like the professionals, like the Sweeney as well, they were shows that while they're all action, you did have to seriously watch them. You know, they didn't give you. They didn't give you anything. If you didn't watch it properly, you'd lose the plot.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether drama is quite as unforgiving these days as it was then.
I don't think it is.
I don't know. But, oh, yeah. That's a That's a fair recommendation.
He blocked the repeats on Granada Plus, didn't he, years ago?
Did he?
Yeah. And at the same time, someone he eventually reneged when it was pointed out that Gordon Jackson's widow, Gordon Jackson didn't have a pension plan to cover anything or insurance or something like that for her. So she was basically destitute without them being aired. So he changed his mind.
Well, what a lovely sentiment.
The story goes. Yes. Well, I tell you, we are going to finish on a high point. I want to congratulate the Doctor Who personnel who had success at the BAFTAs yesterday evening. We recorded this on Monday, obviously, and basically, the BAFTAs has been split into like 15 different shows now. If I'm exaggerating slightly, I think it's three or four. And An Adventure in Space and Time, based on Doctor Who's early years, as you know, won for hair and makeup. That only makes sense, I suppose. Although, slight snub to the amazing recreation of the original control room, I feel. And The Day of the Doctor won for special visual and graphics effects, which means that... Basically, Milk FX and the model unit, because there's excellent models in The Day of the Doctor, if you weren't aware of this already. Did you realise there were models?
In Day of the Doctor?
Yeah. There's a lot of model work in Day of the Doctor. The Daleks on Gallifrey. The TARDIS exploding through the wall. The last three issues of Doctor Who magazine have had interviews with Mike Tucker and his colleagues. On the most recent issue, 472, there's a quite heavy feature on The Day of the Doctor. So this is, you know, the Doctor Who's going full circle. When it first came back, there's a lot of model work, such as Aliens of London with the Big Ben.
Yeah.
And then they kind of, Phil Collinson decided that they didn't want any model work, they just wanted CGI. And sort of since 2011-12, there's been more and more models coming back in.
Yeah, it's never a bad thing. I must admit, I wasn't very impressed with the TARDIS coming through the wall, but...
Were you freeze-framing it to check if it was all correct?
Well, I just felt...
You were, weren't you?
It looked a bit laboured. It looked a bit like a model shot. You know, it just didn't come through the wall. You know, I think it's a funny model shot to do because that sort of moment, you probably do require CGI because, you know, you've got to have something that comes through the wall to break a wall and knock into a Dalek. It's got to have such force. And either the way it was edited or whatever, it just didn't quite hit me. It felt a bit like the TARDIS was going, ah, you know, rather than actually definitively doing something aggressive. Like it was, you know, Frank Spencer at the controls rather than John Hurt.
Betty, I've been articulated.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, maybe it was Frank Spencer at the controls. No reason why he couldn't have been the companion at the time to John Hurt. Picked him up. It's causing all sorts of dilemma and troubles for the Time Lords back in the 70s. And it'd be quite an interesting storyline, that.
There's another interesting bit in when they recorded the Ice Warrior episode, Cold War. The submarine.
Cold War?
Cold War?
I thought it was Cold War.
That's what I said, Cold War.
It's Cold War? I thought it was called Cold War.
It is called Cold War.
Who's on first?
They filmed it upside down to hide the wires.
That's smart.
Very smart, yeah, yeah. So I'm getting a bit obsessed about models again, though, aren't I?
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, it's an interesting area, isn't it? All these little things. I mean, I've been told that it seems quite likely for the console room, for the Capaldi area, that it's not changing much, but lighting may be altered.
Yeah, if you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a sort of a warmer amber glow. So it's interesting, you know, all these tiny things, the small things you see if you're looking into models and into props. As I say, the people noticed how there was a step that vanished and disappeared in Day of the Doctor, which was required for the motorcycle. And as we were saying, you know, the forced perspective in the arc in space from the mirror.
Yes.
Rather than using forced perspective, sorry, to make the second half room, they used a mirror. And in fact, I'd not checked this, but, you know, one shot that apparently becomes a door because the shot would have given away that it's just a mirror there. So, you know, all these little things with props and models is always fascinating. This is, as you say, if you can get away with the fact when you can actually make it that people don't realise it's models, even better.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to have to wrap it up there, ladies and gentlemen. So thanks for tuning into this week's podcast with a K, or downloading it, or streaming it on the website. Audio Bow as well, yep. And we'll speak to you again next week. Until then, bye-bye.